Our special guest is Caroline Darney of SB Nation. Thank you for joining us, Caroline.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Literally, we could talk about just about anything with Caroline, so we took that as a bit of a challenge, right? Thus, we're going to talk about a little bit of everything.
And all right.
So like us, you've been self-quarantined, and with that extra time to digest events, we're going to start from that point. The abrupt end of the ACC basketball tournaments, canceling the NCAA tournaments. Now, we know you're a bit of an unabashed Virginia fan. So help us process the emotions of going from a national championship to having the rug pulled out literally from underneath of you, and that includes all of the teams. What was your reaction then to the cancellation, and now after a couple of months, looking back, how are you feeling about that whole thing?
Yeah, it was just fun fact, everything was canceled on my birthday. So it was like the worst birthday ever, because like ACC tournament is always my favorite. It's been that way since college. Like I grew up in an ACC basketball household with my parents went to NC State. Like my grandfather went to Duke Business School. Like they lived in North Carolina. Like it was just, I always grew up following ACC basketball. And so I always loved that time of the year. Like even for when people my fourth year were going on like their final like spring break, like all that stuff, I was like, I just want to go to Tampa for the ACC tournament. So that was my, like, you know, I worked out with my mom, my family there, so like went on the trip. Anyway, that's just to say, like, it was such a tough time for a lot of people, for everybody, but especially for like really big ACC basketball fans or basketball fans in general, because that's always such a fun tournament. And so going from, it was such an uncertain time. Like I'm trying to think back, like, you know, I'm thinking about Virginia closed the season against Louisville in Charlottesville, and really there was no talk about, I don't remember anything about, are they going to cancel the game, are they going to do this, are they going to do that. And it was really 4 days later, 5 days later, that everyone started showing up in Greensboro. And it just goes to show how quickly things changed. And honestly, if they didn't have the issues that they did in the NBA on that Wednesday night, I wonder if the tournament gets finished. I think that was just such a way when an NBA player got sick. I don't know why I'm blanking on the name of the player who it was right now, but
sorry, I can't remember either. Seems like an eternity ago.
So many things going on. I know. Yeah. When he got sick, it'll come to me in like 5 minutes. I'll just shout it out randomly because that's how things go work. But that just illustrated how quickly it could get out of hand, I think, for a lot of people, and especially the people, quote unquote, in charge. Because you look at, if one player gets it, they looked at who Utah had played, and they'd been all road games, like the five games before that. And then you factor in the referees that were there. So even if the fans aren't necessarily like in contact with these players, like you're looking at how quickly, you know, you've got these guys literally playing defense and touching and sweating and all this stuff. And it's just not great if you're worried about spreading a disease, obviously, or a virus. And so like, I think that really ramped things up because people realized that, one, the players are susceptible, that they're not just, you know, these mythical beings that you kind of imagine are untouched by all these things. And it's one of those, like, that kind of made people realize, like, okay, maybe we shouldn't be playing sports right now. And within, so it hadn't been canceled. I left because my bosses and honestly, my mom was like, it's probably time to come home. And I'm like, yeah, you're probably right.
Which one comes first, the boss or mom?
Mom put more pressure on me, I'll tell you what.
There you go.
Like, I am an adult. And she's like, well. So, you know, I left actually before it was officially canceled. But like halfway into my drive back from Greensboro to Charlottesville, it was, everyone was heading home. No games were played, obviously, that Thursday. And so, yeah, it was, from a Virginia standpoint, Virginia might be the ones that are like the oddest, oddly the most okay with how everything. Now that, I mean, every Virginia fan would want to have the basketball season still play out because, again, it's awesome. And it was a relatively low stress situation. Like, there were key departures, so there wasn't a ton of pressure. This wasn't a team that was expected to be a number one seed. They were definitely playing their best basketball in the back half of the season, like hitting their stride as they went. That was probably like the biggest bummer, I think, for most fans, was like this team was finally putting together some wins and getting the plays that they needed that they weren't getting in the middle of the ACC slate. And so it was that part is kind of a bummer. Like, you know, what could this team really do? What would the bracket have looked like? Who could they have potentially been the, you know, seven seed that no one wanted to see type thing? But they stay champs for another year, technically, you know. But you know, I know a lot of people ran their fake, you know, their simulated tournaments when there wasn't a lot of content, or you know, Kansas finished number one in the AP poll, so they're like, we're number one, we won, and you know, like that sort of stuff. But there was no tournament in 2020, therefore they're still technically reigning champions. And with how dramatic last year was, I think the fear that I've talked to a few friends that were like, oh my God, can you imagine if this was last year? Like, you know, and they don't have that run, that they have this gap after losing to UMBC, that, you know, it's this, that's the stuff that I think a lot of Virginia fans don't want to think about. So in the long run, like, you get your last game being a big win over Louisville. You send the seniors like Mamadi and Braxton that helped win the national championship for the school out on a big win. And you get to keep looking at the banner and no one else gets to claim a championship for a year. So in that sense, like, I think Virginia fans are like, yeah, okay. Yeah. That's, I mean, if we're going to have no basketball, I guess this is the best time to do it.
That's a good thing. Okay. I'm going to let you take a drink. Cause I've been
coffee. It's the lifeblood.
I've been sneaking some tea in here on the side. Not to pitch you a softball question, but, let's get into a little bit of, if the tournaments had played out, who do you realistically see taking the ACC tournament if it had played out?
Oh, I'd have to bring the bracket back up. It's hard not to. I really like that Florida State team, mostly because of the way that they could atone for a lot of mistakes. Like, if they made a mistake during the game, they had a lot of ways that they could make up points and do other things. Their defense was sound. Their offense actually struggled a little bit more than I think people realize, but not badly. Like, it wasn't like Virginia offensive struggles type things, but they weren't as good of shooters as like they might've had the last couple seasons. But they had guys that get in a typical Leonard Hamilton team, really long athletic guys, a couple 7-footers that are going to really block stuff around the rim, and guys that can hit threes in timely fashions. And there were games that, I mean, even when they were down, I think it was the Notre Dame game, right? It was the last, man, all this stuff has quickly left my mind. the Notre Dame game where they were down and came back and were able to secure that, you know, winning the conference. And I really like the way that that team played, but I wasn't super confident in the way Duke went into the tournament. I kind of was, you know, I don't hate the matchups that Virginia would have had. The way that Virginia had won the last few seasons or games, I really would have had to, that's kind of a question mark for me. You know, like, yes, they were playing much better, but were they world beater type things? Like, were they confidently winning these games? No, they were winning by a bucket here or there, like needing Jay Huff's 10th block to seal the deal against Duke. But they're getting it done, which is to say, you know, that counts too. Like, if you can get it done, you can get it done. But I'm trying to think. Louisville was such an up and down team for me.
Roller coaster.
But I really liked a lot. When they were clicking, they were a handful. Jordan Nora, obviously. You got really good shooting. Stephen Enoch. Like, they had some players on that team that were just really, really fun to watch. So I finally brought it up. So here we go. Yeah, I like that. I think I would have gone Florida State.
Okay.
Because we would have had a Florida State Clemson game, which, hey, Clemson, they did some damage when they, but mostly at home, but they did some damage. A Duke State rematch would have been a ton of fun. Virginia Notre Dame, that was a game that was decided in overtime. 52-50, I think, was the final score. Maybe it was 52-49. Either way,
it was, yeah.
It was not a lot of points. So I don't know that a ton of people were super thrilled for that next matchup. But then Louisville and Syracuse. And man, did Syracuse close the season on a like solid performance. So yeah, I'm gonna go Florida State. I'm gonna stick with my original answer.
Okay, good. not gonna call anybody and not gonna ask the host to answer a question for you. Okay. All right. Well, with that, let's take Florida State, and we'll take a couple more here. Did any of those teams have a shot at a national title if we had seen the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I think it's hard, you know, these, I always love these thought exercises. It is always, the caveat is always, without seeing a bracket, it's hard to really say like, yes, this is my final four team, or no, they wouldn't make one, or whatever, because you don't know what matchups you get and what you'd see. So that's my caveat. I do think that the top, with the way things played out, I think the top four ACC seeds potentially could have made a final four, depending on who they saw and who they played and how they were playing. Seeing Virginia in there would sound like, if you'd asked me in February, no, like they're maybe an 8-9 if they're lucky, maybe give a one seed a tough time, but that's probably it. But because they had started to figure some stuff out, and because that defense was as good as it turned out to be, honestly, that might have been one of Tony Bennett's best defenses, which I didn't think I'd be saying at the beginning of the season, but here we are. They would be my definite long shot for it, but they finished second in the ACC with a team that I don't think anyone expected to perform that well. So got them out of the way. But yeah, that Florida State team, like, they played with everybody that they, there were really no situations in which I felt Florida State was completely outmatched. Duke, I just, it's one of those things that people get annoyed with ACC stuff, right? Like, everyone's like, Duke wasn't even that good. Duke's not even that good. Like, the perennial, they're already the preseason favorite for the ACC next year, despite not having won the regular season. And I, yes, the regular season is a thing, people. Like, that's who the media picks each year. You know, they don't pick who's going to win the tournament when the season starts. They pick who's going to be on the top of the standings when the season ends. And, I mean, fact remains, they haven't done it in a decade, right? Like, why do we keep doing this? Like, you look at the roster and you're like, sure, they're going to have good players. But I say that making fun, like, oh, they're preseason favorites. But when it's a Coach K-led team and there's a Jones on the roster, I got to think that they could probably have a chance to do it. And again, like I said, Louisville, they had so many pieces. And when they played well, they could beat anybody. But there were also times where they just looked completely flat. And a lot of that revolves around Nora, I think. However he played was kind of how that team went.
Kind of disappointing not to see all this play out. It would have been fun.
I know.
But it's a fun thing to talk about. Like you said, it's a good exercise to think back. Yeah. And kind of
I know. This is making me nostalgic. Yeah. Something that was 2 months ago.
months. Let's look at overall how this pandemic has had an impact on college sports. Wow. Yeah. There's both good and bad, obviously. And I think people would tend to go with the bad first, but I still see some good in it. I think there's been some shuffling and some rethought of things at the NCAA level and maybe even conference and school level that may turn out to be a good thing for college sports going forward. So I'm looking at, what do you think when you look at college sports? And this is not just basketball, not just football, baseball, you know, the big three. Let's get into all the other sports too. How it's impacted college sports and how we look at college sports.
Yeah, and obviously the elephant in the room, I guess, is the NIL, the name, image, likeness. And I always want to say, like, when they say NLI, I'm like, letter of intent? What's happening? and it's just like, it's so weird to me because I feel like this has been the easy, quote unquote, easy answer for the NCAA for a long time, right? Like, I don't think that there's many people that don't realize, when specifically looking at football and basketball, the amount of revenue that those two sports bring into a university, whether that's through contract, like through TV contracts or shares from a tournament or bowl games or whatever you want to say. And more, it's, you know, people think that the scholarships aren't necessarily equivalent and they don't have the same rights that a student on an academic scholarship would have, right? Or they don't have the time, like they can't go get jobs and because of the requirements for training and all this stuff. So for me, the answer was always, if you let them use their name, image, and likeness and profit off just that, then third parties are paying, not the school or the NCAA, which I feel like solves a lot of the issues. Because when you come into discussing, you know, the first thing people always say is like, well, do you pay the backup center the same that you pay the starting quarterback? Like, when it comes to if you're paying them from the school perspective, and do you pay the field hockey player the same that you're paying the basketball player? And there's all these questions that trickle down. And for me, if you allow the likeness issues or payments or however you want to call it, like the sponsorships or whatever, that kind of figures itself out, because it'd be market value for each player. So if, say, a field hockey player has a YouTube channel where they do tutorials, and they have enough subscribers that they get ad revenue, like, that's no longer going to make them ineligible. So, like, you know, people want to hear what this person has to say. They subscribe, they get ad revenue, like, easy peasy. I think where people now, and we've seen a little bit, like, looks like the NCAA is trying to be like, okay, you're right, which is funny because 6 months ago they were threatening California schools that they weren't going to be allowed in the postseason. Like, and I was like, well, that's weird. What's changed? And I think what's changed is there's been a couple of big basketball players that have gone pro, you know, a couple big time recruits that were expected to play somewhere in the NCAA that have decided to go either to the G League system thing that they're setting up. Jalen Green being the big example here, where he's going to get $500,000 to kind of headline this experimental, I guess is maybe the best way to put it, because he's not joining the actual G League, and that's what I was confused about at first. But, you know, and this is the thing, like, they should have options. Like, that for me is always, like, that's great. There have been players that have gone overseas and played in New Zealand, and that's good. I don't, like, RJ Hampton, like, bless his heart, he got hurt. Like, that stinks. Like, I mean, people get hurt in college, and obviously they can just as easily get hurt playing anywhere that they go. But I also think that part of those decisions might have been influenced by what's going on right now with regards to the pandemic. So if I'm a, you know, top five high school player, and I get offered $500,000 to try this league where they'll still pay for me to go to school eventually, like they said in the contract that they would pay for tuition for him to get his degree somewhere, and I don't even know if there's going to be a college basketball season in the fall, that doesn't sound like a bad idea. Like, and I'm also with the group where if one or two guys from the top 10 go, I don't think that ruins college basketball, because I think that there's enough really good players, and we just adjust. It's also tough having this come a year after Zion, because Zion changed everybody's perspective, and rightfully so, because he was incredible and just the sweetest kid. Like, I absolutely adore, like, watching him play, his attitude. I just absolutely, like, a lot of the annoyance people had with Zion wasn't about the player Zion. It was about the hype and the coverage. And I get that. It was the same thing they did with Trae Young at Oklahoma. It was the same thing they did with, especially with Ben Simmons with LSU, because no one wanted to watch LSU basketball. Like, because it just, you know, sorry, LSU. Bunch of LSU listeners on the ACC.
Yeah. Well, I'll just tell you that I have three sister-in-laws for all LSU grads. So yeah, like, I catch it.
It's one of those, like, and then he got hurt, and then they were just had a bunch of LSU games scheduled, like, to watch, like, to still be on. We're like, why are we watching LSU basketball? Like, Ben Simmons isn't even playing. So I'm just saying, like, there will still always be, I don't know. I'm not quite as like, if they don't want to play basketball, then we don't want them anyway. Like that. Like, it's fine. They're fine. They're kids. They're making choices, because it's not just about them a lot of times. Like, it's about who else, what else is going on in their lives, who they need to support, what they family. Feel they need to do for their personal situation. And sometimes college isn't the right thing for everybody, and that's completely fine. Like, there's no reason to judge kids for making these choices. And I'm curious to see, it also is going to be interesting because, you know, the one and done rule is probably going to end in the next, I don't know, when is Bronny graduating? But if he goes to Duke, I swear, though, I can't deal. There are going to be so many changes, and I do think that there are so many great players currently in college basketball that don't get enough attention, that maybe this will create some situations. Like, the tournament, losing the tournament hurts for all the reasons we've already talked about, like, just how fun it is. But that's also a chance when quote-unquote, my favorite, the casual fans, get to meet guys like Ja Morant, you know, or, like, this year it probably would have been, like, Malachi Flynn for San Diego State. I think most people had already seen Obi Toppin play at this point just because of the amount of, like, attention that he had gotten, and rightfully so. But, like, the Malachi Flynns, the Obi Toppins, the Yoli Childs at BYU, like, those are guys that really missed out on that Ja Morant treatment. And treatment, I mean, like, legitimately earned and deserved attention that I don't want to say, like, real college basketball fans. I don't want to sound like a hipster that knows a band before everyone else does, but...
And why not?
We've seen them play. We've watched them play. We've stayed up and watched West Coast basketball. You know, you see all these guys like Corey Kispert from Gonzaga, I think, was an extremely underrated player this year. So there are good players in the league. Are they going to be as dramatic dramatically good as Zion. No, that's tough. Nobody is. Legitimately nobody can do like replace what he had. So I think this season and all of these discussions directly following the Zion year, combined with the shooting this year, was pretty crummy. I think we can all agree. I don't know if that was, I want to know how much of that was moving the 3-point line back. Not all of it, maybe a smidge, maybe a little bit of it was, but there's always been ebbs and flows in college sports when it comes to talent level and who's coming in at what time, who has the needs, who's filling in places. So I guess this is a very long-winded way of like, I'm not that worried about college basketball. I mean, hopefully it comes back. Like that's my, come on.
Bread and butter.
College basketball. It's my favorite thing in the world. Like I'll miss you football if you're not here this year, but I will cry heavily if there's no basketball. But yeah, I think that, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with that.
Okay. Well, things haven't been what I would call rosy for people in sports media. And we know that hits close to home with you. Mm. Lots of folks being furloughed, let go. Talk to us about the impact that the pandemic has had on these individuals and the companies that they work for.
Yeah, it's tough. I know we at SB Nation have had, we've had furloughs, have been directly impacted by it. You know, when there's no sports, there's stuff to talk about. It's just harder. Like, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, where, you know, companies buying up ads at the same pace and just that change, because everyone's purse strings are a little tighter, right? So while there's still things that you can talk about, you can get creative. Like, you know, we're lucky with SB Nation, we have a little bit, like we just did Marvel Week, like we have a little bit more flexibility with some of the, you know, hey, this is a fun idea, let's get crazy with it, than like say a straight beat writer at a local paper or at a bigger paper. But yeah, it's brutal. It stinks because there are some, you just look all across the industry at, and you know, by no means are journalists or sports journalists the only people to get hit or hurt by these things, but it's not necessarily at the base level a super lucrative career to begin with. There's always a lot of turmoil because you can't, one of the things you cannot do is control what happens on the field or on the court. So you're constantly, you know, and this is the case for someone who works in PR for an NFL team. This is the case for someone who writes about a team. This is the case for people who are marketing for, you know, athletic gear that gets sold to teams. Like you just don't, like you never know. You know, we look at our, specifically for Streaking the Lawn for our UVA site, like, it was clear looking at our traffic numbers from last year to this year, like what happened in April that we didn't have this year? Like, it's, you know, you can look at it and be like, oh yeah, being in a Final Four, people want to click on that and read about it, you know? And when you go, you know, if you look at March of 2018, that wasn't a time where we had a lot of people wanting to click on things because no one really wanted to read about UMBC. And honestly, like some of our writers didn't want to write about it. So you add a pandemic into things with already having little control over the topic. And granted, when you write about things, like it's not like political writers have that much impact on what they're writing about either. But
we don't.
But it's been very interesting to see how creative sites have gotten, how, especially like the stuff coming out of our SB Nation team brands. Next week, we're going into a what if week. So looking at alternate realities, what if your team hired so-and-so, what if so-and-so didn't get hurt? I think that could make up a month worth of content, honestly, but you know, people have gotten creative, like having to look back on previous championships. You know, we did a whole 1 year later thing with the national title, but it's tough because the other question is some of these outlets or newspapers or local things like people have been saying like print media has been struggling for a while as everything goes online, but you'll see it if anyone puts anything behind a paywall. There's, I can't believe there's a paywall. Like, I just don't, like, how do you expect people to get paid? Like, they're writing, you know, and then if the answer is like, well, sell ad revenue, and that's where right now, you know, companies aren't buying as many ads. And so it all like kind of, you know, combines on itself. And that's the question, like, you know, there's been furloughs a week here, a week there, 3 months here. And the question now is like, what's going to be around in a week, in 3 months? You know, hopefully people have a place to come back to.
We'll get into the what's going to be around in 3 months question here in just a second. I want to put this point in here because those of you who are listening right now hear this bird in the background, a beautiful bird. And that is because Caroline is sitting out in the middle of a meadow joining us as this table that's, I mean, it's the strangest thing. It's just out in the middle of nowhere with all these
great
beautiful
Wi-Fi
flowers.
Out here. Yeah. No, that is the, apparently there's one very loud bird outside my office window. I wish I was in a meadow. Man, that would be lovely. I didn't realize you could hear that. I'm sorry.
No.
Oh, there he is. Yeah. It's added ambiance.
It's the same thing here. I have people who are around construction, mm-hmm. et cetera. People have to mow and, you know, hammering.
I'm surprised my dog is being this quiet. It's a miracle.
Yeah, we're going to
get
into. She
usually joins all my podcasts.
We'll get into that in just a moment. Oh, gosh. Let's talk about the 3 months down the road now. Let's predictions for the fall. Are we going to play college football?
Oh, as I added my caveat for the NCAA tournament, my caveat here is I am not a doctor. I am not a specialist with infectious diseases. Oh, gosh, I have no idea. The thing for me, one, I think it could potentially differ regionally. Like, there's no one day where it's going to be all clear for everyone across, where it's like, okay, it's over. Like, everyone come outside now, you know, like. I think there's going to be areas that luckily weren't as hard, hit as hard. There are going to be some places that obviously like New York that have had a lot of infections, that'll take a little bit longer. So I'm curious to see what that looks like. Cause I'm in the camp, like if it's not safe for fans to go, like don't make college kids play. Like that's seems inappropriate in my opinion. If it's not safe for the fans, it's not safe for the players. And when people say like, oh, we'll just do it without fans. It still requires a lot of people, especially football. Like basketball, you could probably pull off with both teams, coaching staff, trainers, refs. You could probably maybe squeak it under 50, maybe. But football, that's a roster. Like that's not even a full roster. Like, and so the problem is it's become evident that schools need the money. You know, when you're operating, it's that whole, what was it, the episode of The Office where they had the surplus and they wanted to make sure that they spent the rest of it so they could get the same amount of money next year, ask for more money next year. And he's like, explain to me like I'm five. Like, it's one of those things, like, you know, schools want to say, oh, see, we're not making any money, so we're nonprofit, we're, you know, doing these things, we need this continued funding or your donations or and now I maybe thought more places would have a rainy day fund. I guess NCAA had one and then spent it on something, which seems like not the point. But I think, what was it, tennis that had the actual like pandemic insurance? Was like, hell yeah, tennis, way to go. Yeah, there's folks. So many. What was that?
Smart folks.
Yeah. And the answer actually, thankfully, in my opinion, isn't that cutting non-rev sports will actually get you more money. It'll lose you some money because they are not full scholarship sports. So every player that you bring in to play squash or lacrosse or field hockey or soccer, and this, not all of them, it depends on like their situation, but you know, the whole roster does not have full scholarship. So mm-hmm. that's tuition that you're bringing into the school for each of those sports you have. So I think in 3 months, I think we have a delayed start. I think we're delayed start, if anything. While I think spring football would be ludicrous, part of me is like, could be fun. Just out of like curiosity of wanting to see what that looks like.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I'm taking it like a week at a time. If I, you know, like, okay, I made another week. Is this a grocery week or is that next week?
You're an optimist. You're taking a week at a time. Most people are going a day.
I know. This is just like, I can get all of my shows in that I watch. I can get all of my, yeah. I guess these theme weeks that we've been doing have helped me go a week at a time. But I think it'll be, I'm beginning to think we're, because how much time do you think they need to prep, right? Minimum a month?
6 weeks.
6 weeks?
Yeah.
Because this isn't necessarily a ton of stuff that these guys can be doing at home on them by themselves. It's hard enough, like, I want to talk to the strength and conditioning coaches. Like, what have you sent your players? Like, have you sent them instructions on how to create, like, a Home Depot bucket filled with cement to be, like, a weight? You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, getting teams up to speed. And then I like to think about, like, who has an advantage at that point. You know, if there's teams that rely heavily, or, you know, who has a bunch of new players coming in, that's going to not be fun. How many have new, you know, quarterbacks or new, you look at a team like Virginia Tech that might be able to be a little bit ahead of the power curve when, if things start late, because they bring back, I think, what, 22, 25 starters or something like that. And so, you know, a team like that might have a little bit of an advantage, with Virginia starting a new quarterback, because Bryce Perkins is obviously gone. So, and you look, I mean, I look at basketball, like, will Virginia be behind the power curve because there's less time to teach the pack line to the newcomers? So anyway, those are just where my brain goes for these things. So there could be potential where they get rid of the non-con games and push things back that way and only have conference play. So I'm optimistic, just because it's more fun to hope that there's going to be football. Right? I don't know. Maybe I should go the other way. Like, imagine that it's not, like, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So that if it does, I'm like, yay. But I think, you know, just keep assessing things as it goes. And right now, I think my guess is that it'll be delayed, but hopefully not canceled.
Well, let's hope that doesn't affect basketball as well.
Ugh, I know. November.
With that being said, let's just go ahead and say that the seasons are going to play out. And let's project Virginia football without Bryce Perkins.
Yep.
And Virginia basketball, in my eyes, being absolutely loaded.
Yeah. So
project those two teams, how they're going to perform this fall and in the spring.
So Virginia football, ooh, I don't know if you've looked at their schedule for this year.
Yes.
Ooh. Welcome to the party, Brendan Armstrong. They open with Georgia in Atlanta. So it's not technically a home game for,
I'm replacing my
for the dogs
with something else here.
I feel like there might be just a smidge more Georgia fans in Atlanta than
you think,
Virginia, but I actually do think there's a nice little pocket of Virginia fans in there. So it's good. You know, Georgia and Clemson within the first 4 weeks of the season. If someone said that the season was just going to start in October with your, like, regular conference play, I don't think Virginia fans would be too upset with that. I don't know. I think it actually, the momentum is good. They've actually had a really great week and a half, I guess, with recruiting. The 21 recruiting class is, I think, top 20 now. Obviously, that's a lot based on just sheer numbers of players that have committed already. But everybody has been, like, a high 3-star. They've actually grabbed a couple 4-stars. And one of the questions, you know, Brendan Armstrong is the guy. They just brought in a transfer from Mississippi State that actually could be really intriguing. He might be able to, he might compete. I think he's going to compete for a starting spot, but this is just from reading about him and watching highlights and actually hearing the Mississippi State fan reaction with, like, we didn't use you the way you should have been. Like, now I'm a Virginia, like, I'm Virginia football is now must watch. And I'm like, just kidding. This past season had, like, I think so many Virginia fans and people that follow Virginia know that we're still a little self-deprecating just because of the where things were. But I think things are absolutely, there's no doubt that things are going in the right direction with coming off of playing in the ACC championship game, the Orange Bowl, all that good stuff. My questions are, you know, what do you see out of Brendan Armstrong? What do you get from the wide receiver core? I think that'll be my biggest question, just because losing Joe Reed and Hassis Dubois, they were two of my favorite players on that team. But Terrell Janna was a really nice, like, revelation over the course of the season. The defense, I think, will be stacked again. I don't have a ton of concerns about the defense. So I can see this team.
I won't hold you to this, by the way.
Yeah, this is way early. You know, I like, you know, VMI. They've got UConn at home. They played, you know, like I said, road neutral, quote unquote, Georgia. They play at Clemson. Woof. home against North Carolina, which is my favorite for the Coastal. I don't know what to make of Miami at this point. You know, they've got their crossover with Louisville. Pitt is going to just be consistently good, especially defensively. But I think this could be, I'd say probably middle of the Coastal, middle upper. I still think bowl. I think they keep the bowl streak going, but I think that's where I sit now at first glance. I don't know. I feel like the only confident wins, I'd say VMI, UConn, Georgia Tech, ODU, Duke, that's five. And then pick up probably a couple more. I'd say like maybe like 7-5. Does that sound crazy?
No, it sounds sounds very reasonable, actually. Based upon what I'm seeing, I honestly think that Virginia may be under-ranked here in a lot of ways. I think people are kind of, you know, saying, well, you lost Perkins. And by the way, are you an LA Rams fan now?
Oh, definitely. And okay. Chargers, because they took Joe Reed. So there, I guess I'm moving to LA.
There you go. That's a quick there and then coming back.
Yeah. Just kidding. I'm never leaving Charlottesville.
But. There you go. Let's move over to basketball here real quick and just project what you think is going to happen with a. I mean, this team is just stacked. It's crazy stacked.
There have been people that, you know, everyone knows what that 2019 team had with Ty and Kyle and Dre and all that stuff. And I think that's why I thought there was going to be a little bit more patience with this past year's team, but that quickly went away with like a loss and people were like, okay, well, this team is doing, it's fine. It's fine, everybody. They're good. But you add Sam Hauser, who by all accounts was the best player on the team last year per reports from the players themselves. Like, you know, you talk to them and be like, oh yeah. Apparently he does not miss. So what they lacked last year was outside shooting. Losing, I don't want to say just Diakite and Key. Those are two big pieces, obviously. But I like what they have. With, you know, Sam Hauser comes in. You keep Jay Huff. If Jay Huff keeps playing like Jay Huff played down the stretch, that is formidable, especially because his defense got so much better. And we always know, like, how it is with Tony Bennett. Like, if you don't play defense well, which is why he didn't play a ton his, you know, second year. But that's normal for Tony Bennett big men, honestly. That's how all of them have progressed, whether it's, you know, Keel Mitchell or Anthony Gill or Darian Atkins or even Isaiah. Like and some of it is they've had good succession and planning in that role. And honestly, Jack Saul's probably the outlier. He stayed consistent. There's nothing more consistent than my dude Jack Saul. But he also wasn't supposed to be more than a role player at any point, because that was, you know, he was forced into a starting position after the issues that Aston Nichols had that got him kicked off the team. So anyway, I digress, but they've been consistent and I feel pretty comfortable with the offensive abilities of what they're bringing to the front court. The question remains, like, you know, I think you lose a little bit defensively potentially with Sam Hauser, but you gain more than what Braxton had offensively, and that's not a knock to either one of their abilities on that side of the ball, but I don't think that there's much of a doubt that Sam Hauser's a better three-point shooter. You know, same thing with, you know, you lose a little bit of the defense with Jay Huff filling in for Mamadi, but you get, you know, more of that offensive threat, even though that was this position or spot that Mamadi greatly improved upon. His outside shooting, I think, was a huge factor in the way that Virginia finished on the stretch. But and then you look at the consistency staying with Kihei. You bring in Reese Beekman, who's supposed to be like the London Perantes Kihei, you know, the next Ty Jerome Kihei follow-up. He's a guy that won four, if you're counting at home, four Louisiana state championships in high school, which is 4 years that you're there. So he's kind of good. He was the most outstanding player in this year's, you know, state championships. Just a really consistent, exactly the type of player that Tony Bennett loves. He's fierce on defense. He's a team first guy that's always looking for pass opportunities, but can also like fill it up. Jabri Abdur-Rahim, one of the highest rated players that Tony Bennett has had come into the program. He's going to be one of the guys that's potentially ready day one. You might see someone like Carson McCorkle sit because there is a little bit of crowdedness on the wings. You know, you bring back Wolde Tensai, who really came on late and had some big shots. And he, I mean, those games at Louisville, the game at UNC, like where he's hitting 6 and 7 threes. Am I missing anybody? You know, Caden Shedrick coming off a red shirt. Cafaro is kind of like a Jack Salt with a little bit more offensive game. So he can set big bodied screens and be your physical guy on defense if you have a big body that you're trying to shut out. So I just think this team has so much potential. Obviously a lot of questions, a lot of those people I listed were new. So that's where I say, like, what's going to happen with learning the pack line, what's going to happen with all that. But then you look at what they're doing, what that team should be capable of under Tony Bennett, who I think is coming off of his best coaching season, taking that team. And again, not an insult to the team, but you look at the roster and what they lost and what they had to make up for, and taking that team to a number two finish in the ACC, especially with the shooting issues that they had, is at least top three of his coaching jobs in his career. Cause I just think he really got the most out of all of those players. And so it also should be a really great schedule, which is another reason why I'm like, please play. Of course, if it's safe, I'll only play if it's safe, but you know, they're playing out in the Wooden Classic out in LA, speaking of LA, over Thanksgiving, and that's Kansas, UCLA, and Georgetown. They'll play two of those teams. So that'll be fun. You'll have an ACC Big Ten Challenge game, which will probably be Ohio State or Maryland, because that's what they like to do. Purdue last year was just because of the Sweet 16 game, let's be honest, or Elite Eight game. And then they just announced a game with Villanova at Madison Square Garden on December 19th, which I hope they play that game every year, because those are two teams that, you know, thrive on bringing players in, building them up, and I just love, like, the games that they played before in the past couple seasons. I think 2016 and 2017 were so fun.
It should be an outstanding game.
That was a really long answer. I'm sorry.
No. But you never mentioned Statman.
Oh, the Statman, the fast break machine. His defense is something that I think was actually more, I'm curious to see what happens with Statman, because it's going to be tough. Like, I think there are some players that will definitely, they're going to be competing for that wing time. I think he got in his head a little bit last year with some of the shooting, because I think everyone just had these shooting woes. And, you know, I didn't mention Casey Morsell. Casey Morsell is going to be a very good player for Virginia basketball. Like, I don't have any concerns. Like, when he gets confident and can take it to the hoop, like, he was fantastic. He shoots better than what he showed. Obviously, we can see that from his high school game. And his defense was so good. And if your defense is so good, you will stay on the court and you can figure it out and play through it. And, you know, he's getting mentored by guys on that team. And, you know, they've all been there, like, trying to figure stuff out. So all of those, I don't know how you pare down that rotation. Like,
you've got two starting fives easily and plus, you know, and I'm going to let you go ahead and take a sip of coffee here while I ramble on just a little bit and give you a little time. Like a lot of us, as we mentioned earlier, you're spending more time at home than usual. Mm-hmm. So what have you been binging on? TV, movies, any new favorite foods on the list?
Oh, foods, no. Foods have been pretty... I've done really well. I've actually... So since March 12th, I don't even know how many days that is anymore, I have left the house, not for... Like, I've gone for a run or taken the dog out. So outside of just those things, I've gone to the store twice. Wow. Done very well.
Yeah.
I'm not hoarding, I promise. I just, you know, I've gone to Costco and they have these, you know, I've strategically stocked up on things. So I'm trying to limit my trips out of the house. So food wise, it's been pretty boring. I did make a funfetti cake this week, and that was a very good choice on my part. Let's see, what have I binged? So I watched all of Sherlock, Netflix. So that's the Benedict Cumberbatch, Martin Freeman. That was entertaining. I like that. Watched Fleabag. I watched The Expanse. Gosh, I'm forgetting some of these that I started at the beginning of. The Expanse was great. That was a Hulu, not Hulu, Amazon, like a space epic type thing. I think 5 seasons. Very entertaining. Very much like that. I have rewatched all 23 Marvel movies in chronological order, of course, because it's the only way to watch. Chronological story. Don't give me any of that release order stuff. So we did, you know, had some fun that turned into, like I said, we did Marvel Week at SB Nation. So it kind of started with like, we're just going to make a Marvel movie bracket. And then that spread into just kind of some fun stuff about if athletes were Avengers, if Avengers were athletes, and ranked all the villains and all that good stuff. Our friends over at Noon's Magician, the Syracuse site, did a if ACC football teams were Marvel movies. That was a fun one too. And then what else have I watched? I've done a little bit of reading. I just like random like novels, usually thriller.
Why do I have the feeling that you're pretty much an 18 to 20 hour a day person that's always on? And then if you get 4 hours, you're good. And then you're boom, right back at it.
So this comes from my aviation days. I was in the Navy. And so I used to fly. So I need 8 hours. Like if I don't get 8 hours, I'm very grumpy. If I get my eight, I'm usually pretty good.
Where are you fitting it in?
I know.
Stuff you're doing.
I've been watching Criminal Minds a lot lately, uh-huh. Which is one of my favorite shows.
It's not giving you any ideas, is it?
No, but it's keeping me from sleeping sometimes because I've also like I like dabbling in those like true crime podcasts, which are not great to like listen to when you're isolating.
No.
It's a little anxiety inducing.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else. Yeah, I do kind of go nonstop though. Though it has, I've had a lot of, that's the thing when people like, look, I understand too. Like I'm very fortunate that I can work for, I've been working from home. So the saddest part was realizing like, wow, my life hasn't changed that much. apparently I live a quarantine life, folks. So, you know, I've been working from home for about a year and some change. So it's nice. Like I'm very fortunate that I get to that. I can keep working from home, that not a ton has been disrupted, that I have the ability to work from home. Obviously that's not the case. So I am very thankful for those things. And this doesn't apply to people that don't have that ability. I haven't been bored. Like I've seen people being like, I'm so bored. I don't think I've been bored since the internet was invented. Like, how can you be bored? Do you not have Netflix? Like, and again, I understand, like, I have these streaming services that I'm capable of.
Yeah.
But I just, there's so, like, I get overwhelmed because there's so much stuff that I haven't watched on Netflix that I want to watch that I'm like, I should just watch Criminal Minds again. You know, like, I need to watch the new season of Ozark, but I forget what happened in the last one. So I got to rewatch that just to make sure I'm up on things. Bosch is out now, too, on Amazon. Great show.
There's not enough time in the day for you.
I know. So I just get overwhelmed and I default back to what I've already watched. Schitt's Creek is great. If anyone hasn't seen that.
That is hilarious.
Ugh, phenomenal show.
And it's so sad that it was really such a short run.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
But it was so perfect. Like they wrapped it up. That was as much as, you know, there's so many bad series finales. Especially like, you know, I always harp on the How I Met Your Mother season finale, series finale.
Horrible.
Rage. I still get like actual, I shouldn't have brought it up because now I'm angry. There's so many that don't get it right. You know, right. I never actually watched the last season of Dexter, and so many people have told me that the final episode of Dexter was terrible, like all this stuff.
Yeah.
While I want a million more episodes of Schitt's Creek, I think that the way that the story went and the characters developed and the way that they closed it out was so perfect that like I can't even be mad at them that it's like I'll just keep watching it over and over again, I guess, like because it was just so well done.
My colleague Will wants to know, well, he says that you're playing Animal Crossing, so he has a question for you.
I can't believe I forgot to mention that takes up a lot of my time.
Do you think Tom Nook is a crook?
Well, I go back and forth because he's right. It's an interest-free loan that this little raccoon gives you when you show up to his island. So Animal Crossing, for those that aren't familiar, is a video game for the Switch, Nintendo Switch. And you are a villager, you're a human. And this raccoon, Tom, you buy a package, quote unquote, to like go to the side, like you build up a deserted island where it's you and two animal villagers and him on it. And they have a store and you build up from there and you get to create, you know, build your store and build your museum by collecting bugs and donating them to an owl. It's a whole thing, but you walk out of your tent in the first day and he's like, I'm so glad that you bought this package. You owe me $50,000. Like, right off the bat, you're in debt. And so every time you want to like build up your house or, you know, add a room or add a basement, it's like, here's your $2.4 million like loan that you owe me.
Tom, the kid's a crook.
He's a crook. Because you have to pay him back in the money that he has created that's only good on his island.
Of course.
Yeah, it's great. It's a lot of fun. It's, I find it very relaxing, and a lot of my friends play it. Now that I've paid off all of my loans to Tumna. But it gets anxiety. Intense. Like, there's turnips that are bought and sold, and you can make money off of those, and it's out of control. Fishing, collect all sorts of different animals.
One more question for you. I'm never going to forget this. So, Caroline, if you were to have a dog, and you do.
Yep.
And you were to name said dog, which you have.
Yes.
What name would you choose, and why?
So why did I choose what I named my dog? Okay. This is actually good. This will dispel a bunch of myths on the internet. I know the people want to know. So I have a sweet, sweet dog. She's 5, and her name is Bennett. But it is not after Coach Tony Bennett. I named her after Elizabeth Bennett from Pride and Prejudice, which a lot of people don't believe me. I'm like, no, I did not name. I mean, and look, I have my good friend Kyle. They actually got a championship puppy. His wife wanted a puppy, and he said, and the deal that they made was, if Virginia wins the national championship, we'll get a puppy. And so they got a puppy, and they were going to name it after the player that played the best in the tournament, but they decided that having a dog named Kyle and a human named Kyle was confusing. So they went with Bennett, and that was legitimately after Tony Bennett, and they've sent Tony Bennett a picture of them, whatever. But yeah, so her name is Bennett. She's a psycho. She's part husky, part something. She likes to vocally join my podcast most days, but she's great and I love her. I'll tell you what, I'm very grateful to have a dog in these times, because it lets me get outside, one, and two, it's definitely good company. So I talk to her anyway during the week, because again, I work from home, but it's, maybe I've talked to her a little bit more now.
As long as Bennett is not talking back, everything's good.
Yeah, we're good. She's not talking back yet.
And we'd have to check back in on you frequently.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Our special thanks to Caroline Darney of SB Nation for spending time with us. It has been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, me too. Thanks for having me. This was super fun. Anytime.
For sports news and more, check out accnation.net. Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast or internet streaming platform, plus social media, simply by typing in ACC Nation. That's ACC Nation. Follow the guys on Twitter. Will's at WillsWorldMN. Chris is at ACC Midnight Inc. Xavion is at XAYVEON. And I'm at ACC The Q. Until next time, cheers.